Welcome to Moving Averages, a new financial podcast from Vox Markets. This series will feature expert market analysis, interviews with top traders and commentators, and much more to bring you fresh insights into the world of finance.
And for this episode of Moving Averages, we have Glenn Goodman, aka The Shares Guy. Glenn was a business journalist with the BBC and ITN before becoming a trader and making headlines after shorting the financial crash. He now has a massive audience of over 250,000 on his Facebook page, The Shares Guy. On that page, he gives advice to investors about trading cryptocurrencies, a subject which he has been an authority on in recent years. This podcast is brought to you by Vox Markets. Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company. It offers RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Learn more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Glenn, good to meet you. Thank you for coming in today. I'm fascinated to know how you, because obviously you were a journalist before, how did you transition from being a journalist into trading?
Well, I started as a business correspondent and I worked for the BBC and I worked for ITN for many years as well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I already had the bug. I'd done a degree in economics. I was always fascinated by how things worked in the financial markets. And I got more and more into it. I was reading more and more books and articles as I was starting to do it as a profession as well. Inevitably, I started trading. And for me, it all began during the dot-com boom.
Okay.
Yeah, which was actually just slightly before I was a business correspondent. So I'd already got the bug from my degree. And basically during the boom, I made all the classic mistakes, everything you can think of.
Didn't we all?
Because I got in so near to the end of the boom.
Oh, right.
Which is kind of what happens if you don't
really
know about stuff and you're just a silly kid. Which is basically what I was. So I've heard about all the, you know, it's from friends mainly. Oh, have you heard about this company and that company? So there was a company in particular called Gameplay.
I remember.
You remember?
I do indeed, yes.
One of my friends worked for them and he took me and showed me around their building. They were even interested in hiring me. And it was that kind of classic Google office before Google even had an office, probably. It was just people roller skating around and playing pool and playing ping pong. They had five floors in a big building in central London. You know, there was just money oozing out of the place. And obviously online gaming, I was a gamer and I knew that it was going to be massive, online gaming. And of course, it has become massive. But I learned that valuable lesson that has stood me in good stead all these years, which is just because somebody's got a good business idea doesn't mean that your shares are going to go up. So I bought them basically at the top. And then a few weeks later, they started crashing. It was the dot-com crash. Everything was crashing. So they crashed too. I think they went in half very, very quickly. And I phoned up my friend and he was like, this is fantastic. This is such a great opportunity to buy even more. We've got to spend more. So I started digging up my meager savings and trying to put as much in as possible. And the same thing happened a few weeks later after they'd fallen in half again and then fallen in half again. In the end, if I remember correctly, they went from something like £6 per share to 1p per share. And I was still holding on because they're going to come back after this crash. But of course, what happened was a company just bought them out for 1p. And that was it. And my, you know, you don't have any choice in that situation. And it was kind of like, this isn't fair. You didn't even give me a chance to get my money back. So I basically lost everything, which was a fantastic lesson and has made me many, many fold richer in the years that followed by realizing the huge mistake I'd made and never to repeat that.
I think every single successful trader I know has been wiped out at least once. So you did it early.
I think it's good to do it early because otherwise you make all the mistakes later on. You don't realize what the dangers are. And 5 years down the line, you might lose everything. Better lose it at the beginning when you've only got a few grand to start with.
Absolutely. There's a lot to be said for sort of managing risk.
I suppose yes. It is the. So that's how you first started. So you're trading sort of .com, everything else. Everything goes down the tube. Bit of a disaster. What did you sit back and think to yourself, right, I've got to get a strategy here? Were you a value investor? Because obviously you thought this is a good company or whatever, or were you looking at technicals? Were you, you know, you mentioned you've done a degree in economics, so obviously you could read a balance sheet. Was that sort of something you looked at?
Yeah, I mean, over the years I've been through all the different types of investing. I've experimented with every trading technique that you can think of. And I certainly started off with a mixture of value and growth investing based on fundamentals. And that was partly because in my job as a business correspondent, I had to evaluate those kind of things all the time. I was constantly interviewing CEOs and I was always reading balance sheets. So that kind of information filtered very strongly through to me. And I started investing based on those principles. Over the years, I learned about technical analysis, and in particular, I learned about trend following, which was a very mystical kind of thing, even in the early 2000s, even 10, 15 years ago. It was incredibly difficult to find any information about trend following. There were only one or two books that existed, and they were generally full of interviews with successful trend followers talking vaguely about being zen and following the trend until the end and stuff. So I kind of had a vague idea, but I could never really grasp the specifics, and it was just kind of this endless hunt that I had to understand what it was all about, which took me into some very interesting places, including little secret clubs of traders that would meet in obscure church halls in parts of London to discuss these things. And
sounds very dodgy.
It was all very weird. I mean, everything's all out in the open now. There are so many books about, I mean, everybody understands how trend following works now, but I think it was kind of the secrecy of it and that attracted me, and it stayed with me ever since. So there's still a strong element of trend following to my trading now. In a very simplistic sense, I don't go for all the crazy indicators that a lot of people use in technical analysis. I don't, for example, even use Bollinger Bands or Fibonacci levels, which are quite standard these days. But as far as I'm concerned, there isn't enough empirical evidence to back up the usage of them. I'm very much a trader now who uses big data to steer the kind of techniques that I use. So even though I'm a discretionary trader and not a systematic trader, nonetheless, I still base my trading techniques very heavily on academic studies that have been done. I want to know that the ideas that I'm using actually work in practice, not just in theory.
Okay. I mean, you're quite well known these days for crypto trading and cryptocurrencies. Is that what your main focus is these days, or do you look at equities at all?
I'm still in everything. So, all right. So I've been trading stocks and shares. Commodities, currencies, treasuries, and now cryptocurrencies. So I've been trading all those first groups for 15 or so years, or more than 15 in for stocks. And then I got into futures quite early as well. Cryptocurrencies I got into a few years ago. I first traded Bitcoin in 2014 when it was a hell of a lot cheaper than it is now. And you know, I'd love to be able to say I knew that was going to the moon. There was no doubt about it. But I was skeptical at the time, and there were very, very good reasons to be skeptical. I mean, I remember there was
still are.
Yeah, there still are. But at that point in time, Mt. Gox, the biggest exchange in the world, you may remember, had been robbed and had to close down. And that was the biggest Bitcoin trading exchange in the world. I mean, what future would stocks and shares have if the New York Stock Exchange one day was wiped out by a robbery that stole everything, and then it closed down, and there was seemingly at that time not any hope of anyone getting their money back? I mean, that would be the end for... So, but Bitcoin, remarkably, managed to come back from that. And so... So, I was buying and selling it over the years, and I've done very well out of Bitcoin. I shouldn't sit here and have sour grapes, but at the same time, I didn't you know, remortgage my house and everything, put everything on Bitcoin, which obviously I should have done. Now we know that.
We're all really good at trading backwards, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
So have you got a favorite Bitcoin? I mean, I've lost count. There's over like, how many is cryptocurrencies? There's over 2,000 or something like that.
Something like that now,
it's
yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, it's not just you that's lost count. I think everybody's lost count because a lot of them are failing so quickly as well that it's hard to kind of keep track of the number and also the number of real ones that exist, because quite a few of the ones that supposedly are cryptocurrencies aren't really. They're just scams, out-and-out scams, just lies.
There's always going to be the opportunistics out there who are going to sort of try and take advantage of it.
It's true, but because it's not regulated, obviously, it's just incredibly easy to just pretend you're a cryptocurrency when you're not.
So talk me through the process then. I've never traded crypto, so what do I need to do?
Right, well, it's going to get a lot easier to trade a variety of cryptos in the next year or two. But for the past couple of years, when I've been trading a lot of cryptos, dozens of different cryptocurrencies, I have to use dodgy, unregulated exchanges that are based in either dodgy countries or in some cases, not even in any recognizable country. They're just websites, effectively, websites that you send your money to and then hope that you'll get it back. So obviously, I've taken many steps to try and mitigate the enormous risks involved with handing your money over to unregulated strangers. For example, I use a variety of different unregulated exchanges based in different countries, so that if one of them suddenly goes bust or steals all the money, then maybe I only lose 10, 15% of my money instead of all of it. So I spread my money around lots of different exchanges. And during the craziness of last year, when so many prices of cryptocurrencies were going through the roof, I had a policy of investing relatively small amounts of money and leveraging them up enormously on the platforms that would allow me to, making a lot of profits very quickly, then withdrawing all the profits and just leaving, say, a couple of thousand in a particular exchange, and then kind of starting the process again. And it was actually, I should go off on a slight tangent here, that was related to experiences that I had during the credit crunch in 2008. I was going to say famously, but it's not really famous. I slightly famously did what I called the little short, which I wrote about, a nice feature for the Times a couple of years ago about my experience. It was when, you know, they liked it because the film was coming out, The Big Short, so they could tie it in, put a nice picture of Brad Pitt next to a picture of me, you see. Sort of shared, we have one and the same. So, but
is that why Angelina got rid of him?
Yeah. Must be it. Must, she saw the photo of us together. She knew that I've chosen the wrong one. No, it was, what was it? Yeah, so 2008, basically what I did was I was very much expecting a crash. I mean, it was no secret that everything was going to hell. It had been since Northern Rock in 2007. In fact, even before that, things were going on. So, and we all knew about the subprime crisis in the States. So it seemed like madness to me that the markets were still not crashing. It felt like they had to. But at the same time, I'm not one of these crazy traders who just goes short while things are still going up or even going sideways. I always place my stop entries above or below the market, you know, sort of where I expect it to go, to be triggered by the collapse. So that's what I did. I basically used spread betting to go short, and I, as I say, slightly famously turned £3,000 into £100,000 pretty quickly by just placing my stop at the perfect point. And then when the market started collapsing, all my stops were triggered for different instruments that I wanted to go short on. Not just stocks and shares, actually. I mean, I was shorting a lot of banking stocks, obviously, but also commodities were going crazy as well. So I was making a lot of money from the wild swings in those at the same time. Anyway, to go back from that tangent to kind of the present day, trading cryptos in 2017 was pretty similar in many ways to that kind of building £3,000 into £100,000 thing that I did in 2008. As I say, I would put small amounts into exchanges because I didn't trust them. I would leverage up and make lots of money very quickly, and then I would take it all out again as soon as trends started changing, and I'd sort of follow the same process over and over again. Now, I can't in all honesty say that that same opportunity will arise this year, next year, or possibly even ever again in cryptos. You just never know. But I will be ready, because I think the technology behind cryptos, which I'm very au fait with now, and I work with a lot of cryptocurrency companies, I understand the enormous potential. It's just, to me, like the beginning of the internet. It's going to transform so many different industries, and all the froth has come off now. The prices are way down, and there is a fantastic... there's a fantastic feeling inside me that it's all going to kick off again. But as I say, I'm not the kind of trader who just takes wild bets. My money is on the sidelines, and I am waiting for the excitement to begin before I put my money into it.
So you're obviously a bull of cryptocurrencies. Any particular cryptocurrency, or just look in the top 10 or whatever?
Well, they're all rubbish at the moment. I mean, honestly, I'm a long-term bull, sure, but you look at the chart of any cryptocurrency now, and they've just been falling since December. I told my Facebook followers in December, I did a big post on December the 24th saying the party is over, or words to that effect. And I didn't say we're going to get a crash right now, but I said things are looking a lot more dangerous, a lot more risky than they were before. The risk reward has shifted quite dramatically. So I was kind of getting ready to sell, and indeed I did sell not just Bitcoin but all my cryptocurrencies in December and January as the market started falling.
Did you go short? That would have been a brave move.
I tried a bit of shorting, but it wasn't the right climate for it. So I got cold feet pretty quickly. Shorting, to me, is a very difficult game generally. It's a lot harder than going long. I mean, there are people like Evel Knievel who specialize in it, obviously. Who does he write for? Okay, he writes articles all over the place, isn't he? Evel Knievel, British guy. But to me, shorting is much harder for empirical technical reasons, really. The swings just tend to be much more violent. So, you know, when you're going long, you can get a nice long trend which can go on for, say, 2 years, like you saw in Bitcoin. That was a 2-year long exponential curve upwards with only, I mean, it had stops along the way, but it never had any kind of massive decline during that 2 years, which is why I was so sure in December that it was the end, because suddenly that exponential curve had been broken very dramatically, and it hadn't been for 2 years, mm-hmm. which was a very strong signal. Whereas when you're shorting, as with Bitcoin in January, February, March, you know, it falls dramatically, but then it rises dramatically again, almost back to as high as it was before, and then it falls dramatically again. And it's so much harder to make money off those swings than just sitting and holding a lovely thing for 2 years and just laughing all the way. That's the way to do it.
So you mentioned earlier you've got a Facebook page, and I believe you've got quite a strong following on there. Tell us a little bit more about that. What's it called and what you do?
Well, it's called The Shares Guy because initially I was talking about stocks and shares and how to trade them. And then I got more and more into talking about crypto. The area got more exciting and people wanted to hear more and more about it. I use the kind of production techniques to make it fun that I learned in TV when I was a TV reporter, how to shoot, how to edit. So I like to think that they're quite fun to watch, and if you see them, you'll see that I kind of step into the charts and I'm able to walk around and kind of point at what's going on in the charts and that kind of thing. So I enjoy that side of things, and other people enjoyed it too. So last year, while everyone was getting into crypto, my following was growing and growing very fast, went into the hundreds of thousands quite quickly.
Which
was bewildering initially because I had so many people private messaging me the whole time, and I'm the kind of polite Englishman who feels I have to reply in full to every single person. So I was literally, I mean, I went on holiday with my friends and they got so annoyed because I just spent all the time you know, we're walking around, they're going, look, there's the Tower of Pisa or whatever. And I'm just like, hold on, I'm just talking to Mustafa and telling him about what cryptos I'm interested in right now. And it just, I mean, it was nonstop. Things have calmed down a bit now in the crypto world generally because prices have been falling. And frankly, because I have not been trying to whip up any kind of frenzy when none exists. I always tell the truth. I'm not a salesman. I'm not the kind, well, I'm not even selling anything. So of course I'm not, but I'm not trying to convince anybody that the market's going to come back any minute now, which a lot of people on YouTube and Facebook, you know, they're salespeople. They're trying to kind of get the excitement going. I'm not into that. The market's going down. I ain't buying. I'm waiting. And whenever anybody asks me, I just say, well, I'm waiting. It's up to you what you do. That's what I'm doing.
Is it a subscription model then? Or is it you just do it for a bit of fun because you're doing it anyway? You won't...
Bit of fun
in
the main.
Good on you.
Obviously, it would be nice to make money in ways other than just trading.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, And you know, there will be ways. And eventually, a lot of people are asking me to set up a kind of subscription thing where I keep them up to date with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't actually be telling people what to trade, but I may well start a subscription at some point to so that people can at least follow what I'm doing. But for the meantime, yeah, it kind of makes me feel better about myself that I'm just making money from trading and then telling people about what I'm doing rather than making my money from other people and pretending that I'm making it all from trading, which is frankly what a lot of these kind of trading teachers do.
There's a lot of people out there, snake oil salesmen, who pretend that they're trading gods. And I always think, well, if you're that good at trading, why would you bother even trying to teach it?
There is that.
Yeah.
There is that.
Those that can do and those that can't. I've said that I used to be a teacher, so I should keep my mouth shut, really, shouldn't I?
But then, like I say, you know, if people are asking for it and they keep, because I speak at a lot of conferences as well, and people always come up and go, right, how can I follow your trades? You know, you seem to know what you're doing. I want to do it too. And I do feel obliged. So I'm going to have to do it at some point because it feels rude not to, almost. But yeah, I ain't going to rip people off like some of these chances do.
Bad people. So I'm fascinated by crypto, like everybody else. And I'm just thinking to myself, when I've looked at it, I think, well, you can't really apply any fundamentals to it because it's not like there's news coming out. It's not like sort of all of a sudden Apple are going to launch their own cryptocurrency or buy out Bitcoin or anything like that. So you must purely use technicals then when it comes to trading. Missing something?
I mean, like I say, I've made a big effort to really understand the technology underneath cryptocurrencies that keep it running. So I have a fair idea of which ones may succeed and which ones have got no hope. Mm-hmm. I can't say this is definitely going to be the next Amazon.
So when you say the technology, we're not talking about the blockchain part of it, we're actually talking about the technology that goes behind making that cryptocurrency work.
Yeah. Because they all vary to some degree. They're not all based on blockchain. Some of them are based on more advanced technologies that are themselves loosely based on blockchain.
Okay.
So we're already moving beyond blockchain to some degree, I think. The most exciting developments are some way beyond that. So I do use that kind of fundamental information, if you want to call it that, to inform my trading.
Yeah.
I do. But nonetheless, when it comes down to it, I'm the kind of trader in whatever I trade where price is king. Price is all important. And if the price tells me that things ain't right, then I'm out of there, regardless of whether I think a company has the most fantastic technology in the world. As you and I both know, you only often find out that something's gone horribly wrong with a company long after the stock price has started falling. And it's only, you know, while it's falling, everyone's like, well, I mean, this is a good company though. I mean, you should look at the latest trading statement. I mean, it's very encouraging. So I'm sure this is just a blip. And obviously sometimes it is a blip, but, you know, as somebody who's looked at chart after chart after chart for 18 years now, I tend to have quite a good feeling for when something's just a temporary correction or when something is really definitely horribly wrong. And when it's horribly wrong, I'm out of there. And then, you know, sure as eggs is eggs, a few weeks later, you'll get your statement out saying, oh, sorry, we didn't know that the financial director was stealing all the money. We're terribly sorry. But no, nobody can have their money back. Sorry about that.
No good, no good. And you've also got a book coming out, haven't you?
Yes, The Crypto Trader, it's going to be called.
And is that about the technology then? Or are you going to be talking about trading in it? Why would I buy this book?
Mainly how to trade cryptocurrencies.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's so that it will include, well, I mean, there's going to be a little bit of background about, you know, how cryptocurrencies work and blockchain and blah, 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 but not much. Because you can get that for free pretty much anywhere on the internet anyway. So, you know, just go to Wikipedia. Instead of what you'll get from me is kind of 18 years of experience of trading and how I applied that to successfully trade cryptocurrencies. So you'll get some kind of how to trade type information for people who don't really understand what signals to look out for and what makes a good trade and what makes a bad trade. But also, I will be explaining the stuff that I referred to earlier about, you know, the exchanges that are dodgy but have a lot more cryptocurrencies on them. You have a choice between kind of exchanges with fantastic amounts of liquidity, really small differences between buy and sell prices, and tons of different cryptocurrencies to trade. And you can have leverage up to your ears. And it's all kind of wonderful and exciting, apart from it's all unregulated and who knows who's even running these exchanges. So that's on one hand. On the other hand, you've got regulated exchanges in Europe that where you can trade cryptocurrencies or trade spread bets and CFDs that are based on the prices of cryptocurrencies. But the spreads are so much wider between the buy and sell prices, so much wider.
Can you arbitrage them then, or can you do that?
Yes,
delivery, isn't
to
it?
To some degree, you can actually, and there have been some fantastic opportunities to arbitrage between wildly differing prices on different exchanges, particularly during the crash in January.
Yeah.
The price of Bitcoin on one exchange might be a couple of $100 different from the price on another
really?
Exchange at any point
God,
in time.
I love a good arb.
I know. I should have. You know what? I was so tempted to buy on one and sell on the other and start arbitraging at that time. The only reason I didn't was that I genuinely feared that these exchanges were about to go bust altogether. They would be out. They would have outages that lasted hours every day at that point in time because they were so overwhelmed with traffic. They were just crashing continually. You know, there was no information coming out of some of the exchanges because it's just like some guy in Poland running it. Or, you know, it just didn't seem safe to start putting huge amounts on shorting here and going long on the other one in case my money just disappeared altogether.
This guy in Poland's a very busy boy, isn't he? Because he gets blamed for a lot of things.
There's a lot of crypto people from Ukraine and from Russia, I've noticed. I'm not quite sure why they're... Well, I guess they have very good
technical... There's a wealth of talent there.
Yeah, technical education.
Yeah.
Lots of PhDs over there.
So let's just say for a second we stick you on a desert island and we say, right, you can have one tool to trade crypto. What would it be?
One tool to trade crypto.
You know, would it be bar charts? Would it be candlesticks? Would it be, I don't know, an RSI oscillator? Point and figure.
Hold on. I'm thinking. What would it be? It would be... Volume.
That's okay. It. Yeah.
That's all I need is the price, the volume. I'm happy. Moving averages, for example, are a very commonly used tool in trend trading and trend following, which is one of the main, as I said, one of the main kind of techniques that I use in trading. And yeah, so people use moving averages a lot in trend trading, but I've found over the years that I need them less and less because, I mean, all they are really are just kind of summations of the information that's already in the price.
Derivative, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a derivative to kind of, if you can't see the trend. But sort of over the years, I like to think that kind of like the guy in the Matrix, it's like the charts revealing themselves to me now. I don't need somebody to show me the curve. I can see the curve just by looking at the price.
What's that film where the kid says, "I see dead people"? I see charts. Is it?
Exactly. I see prices all the time.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, listen, I really, really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in and visiting us today. And hopefully we'll catch up again soon, yeah?
That would be great.
Brilliant. Thank you.